Session number 16727, Reverend J. Brooker, Reel 3.
Reverend Brooker, Reel 3. You went into a signalling unit, Reverend Brooker. What kind of training were they giving you?
Training in Morse, both buzzer type, heliograph, lamp, and of course normal procedure in how to use a wireless set. Two sorts of wireless sets, 80 set, 38 set. I'm not sure whether the 38 set was in then, but it came in later. That was a little section from platoon to section and back to battalion headquarters. Line laying, telephones. Well, I think largely that's about it.
Can you describe the 18 set? What did it look like?
That was the one that was carried on the back, and the top half was the receiver and the bottom half was the transmitter. Signallers went to a company, they went in pairs. They would take turns carrying it. One would carry and the other would operate. And it had a range. Well, I can remember working one for a range of 15 miles. I believe that was a record on the Downs, South Downs. But normally they had a range of about up to 5 miles.
Were they efficient?
They were. I thought so.
It must be quite a weight on the back.
Well, not so much. It's. I think the present one they use is a lot heavier. I don't know. I forget what it is now, but they came out after the war. But those 18 sets were very good. They weren't all that heavy.
Were you trained in code signals? And
oh, yes. Procedure for... we didn't learn codes, not the ordinary signaler. I had the codes when I was a signal officer with the Durhams. But you learned how to send a code, send a doings out in code in Morse. It's usually, if it's in code, it's in Morse, and receive it. They're usually done in letters of five, groups of five, and then of course the signal officer would decode the message, and if necessary, reply, decode another one, and do it that way. But there's also a lot of it is done in ordinary speech. And there's a procedure for that. You learnt that. Roger out and all that sort of thing. But I won't go into details. But how you would... And you learnt the code names for the officers. And the signal officer was always known as Pronto. That's the only one I can remember. Funny, isn't it?
Morse code, what was the... speed of passing the code?
It varied, but you had to reach a certain speed, and I can't remember what the speed was. You had to read at a certain speed and send at a certain speed, and you had to read at the lamp and send at a certain speed. I can't remember what they were.
Semaphore flags, did that come in?
Oh yes, I've forgotten that. Yes, semaphore, yes, and sending Morse for flags, a large one for a doings and a short one for a dot, large for a dash and a small for a dot. We had to be able to do that as well, and read it.
Was the heliograph still into the sun ray, the catches the sun ray?
We had to know about the heliograph in case we went to the desert, so that we could do it done by the sun. But you couldn't do too much in England, naturally.
How long would the training last to make you into a complete signaller?
I don't know now. It must have been a couple of months. Then you passed out. If you didn't pass, you went back to your joints, but we passed out, so we were all right.
What happened after you came out? Where did you go then?
Came out.
And when you came out of the signal, well, I wish when you passed out, sorry, when did you go then?
He was all absorbed into the signal platoon, in the battalion. You see, headquarter company has the serving arm, such as that, looks after the food for the battalion. Ah, that's something I forgot. We would get that from battalion quartermaster, not from brigade. It came down through, you see, the food and things like that. And, of course, arms and all that would come through the battalion quartermaster, who was usually an officer. I've lost myself now. Signaling, back to signaling.
You went into the battalion signal, or headquarter signal platoon?
Oh, it's part of a headquarter company. And it's usually about the same size as a normal platoon. And what would happen is that you'd be absorbed into it, and you'd take part in the jobs of a signal platoon, which was, of course, supplying signalers to each company with an 18 set and an exchange as well, and telephones to each company and all that sort of thing, manned by signalers. Of course, you'd learn to run out lines and connect telephones as well and things like that.
That included repairing when they were broken?
Fortunately, yes, finding faults and repairing lines when they were broken, yes. But if an apparatus was broken, well, we had our own storeman, usually pretty good at it. If he couldn't, he'd go back to either battalion or wherever it was needed to be repaired.
You weren't taught basic repairs yourself if anything was basic in action, for example?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Like replacing valves and all that sort of thing and finding where the fault is and correcting it. Oh, yes, we were all taught that. You had to know that. And the same with the telephones. You had to know that. Basic. Very often it wasn't anything really serious, because, I mean, they were pretty basic. Just one line out to it. It was Earth return, you see. And what we used to call the Don 5 telephone. They're totally different now, of course. The only drawback with that was that the enemy could tap in on them, because it was Earth return, you see. And they could tap in on the Earth and get a connection with the doings.
And there was no sign that this was happening, was there?
No. But I don't think it was done too much in this last war, because, of course, the war was so fluid. It wasn't trench warfare like it was in the First World War. We did get stopped and stayed in one place for a while, but not for months on end. Might be a few days or something like that, and then we'd move on or retire, whichever it was. But it was mostly moving on when I was in action. I was very fortunate.
So you billeted together, the signalers?
Oh, yes. All billeted in the same place, yeah.
How long were you with the battalion?
That battalion? Until I went to Octu, which was what? I went to Octu in November 42.
How did that process come about? What made you go in for officers?
Ah. As I say, I went to the signal platoon, and then, as I say, we Dunkirk days, we've got the chance to go into the Air Force. And out of the four of us in the battalion, three of us were in the signal platoon, and we got... We were transferred then to what was known as the Pioneer Platoon, because we were going to leave the battalion. And because it was the Air Force, the pioneers are usually those that do all the work of checking aircraft and all that sort of thing, as well as other pioneer work. So we went into there. And eventually the time came when we weren't transferred at all, because they had enough. And so we were at New Milton then, and I said to my wife, "Well, I'm going to volunteer for the next thing that comes along." You know what it was? Glider pilots. And then shortly afterwards, anyone that was an NCO, was an NCO by then, had so long as an NCO, would wanted to volunteer or take commission, put the names forward. And I put my name forward. And I fortunately had a very, very good platoon sergeant who gave me a very good write-up.
How many stripes had you at this point?
Just the one. Just the one. Anyway, I applied and I went up. I went in front of Tiger Hodgson, who was the second in command then, and he asked me a lot of questions, you know, the usual thing. And it wasn't going very well until he said, "Is there anything else you can say?" I said, "Well, yes, I was accepted as training for pilot in the Air Force." That put it right. So my name went forward, and that was it. I didn't hear anything for a little while. We'd moved to, how do we know? Let me think. I can't remember whether we'd moved to Bognor or not then. No, it's from Bognor. I went to Priyaltu. No, it must have been whilst we were still there. I got we were near Southampton, something, I can't be sure. But I know sometime afterwards I got sent to War Office Selection Board at Winchester. And the funny thing is, that the day after that, no, I went to War Office Selection Board at Winchester. Did the various aptitude tests, you know, that we do. And
what kind of tests did they give you?
Oh, dear. General knowledge test, which you get in anywhere, and also they give you tests of capability of talking to men. I can remember one case where, and of course you do some crisis training as well, and they see what you do under emergency and all that sort of thing. I can't remember all of it. I can remember the paperwork, and I can remember getting up and speaking in front of some men, you know, something, I can't remember what it was, and it seemed to pass. Anyway, that was a weekend. All we did in a sort of course as well. I got the results of that now. That was at Winchester.
What was this course like?
What, the assault course? Tough.
Do you recall what it was made up of?
Oh, I can remember the first thing is that you crossed the stream, and that's when I got the first problem with climbing walls, ropes. You see the sort of things. And we finished by wading across another, doings up to our necks, and then running through Winchester back to the doings. It was all done at the run. Anyway, we all passed, and that was it. Didn't hear any more. Didn't hear anything about guided pilots either. Then we moved to Bognor, and it was there that I got my posting to Priyaltu, which was Rootham in Kent. And I'm told the very next day my posting for glider pilots came. Was I glad that the doings came first? So I reported to. I was by then I was two stripes up, and reported to Rootham. There again, you see, we did tests. Now, I think we were the first lot of ex-NCOs that had, apart from going straight to Octu from, say, university or anything like that. And if you passed all your tests, you went next week to Octu. We passed all our tests, but of course, there was a chance then of getting a week's motorcycle training and a week vehicle training, so I stayed for those two. That was a good week, that was. Always remember the first time I got across a motorbike. It was they were I mean, it's 350, 250, 350 Enfields, Royal Enfields in those days. They got on that motorbike, put it in gear and got away. And I can remember the corporal instructor coming to the side of me, change up, change up. And you can imagine what it was like, first time on a motorbike. You'd just been given, told how to do it. Anyway, at the beginning, that's what it was, you know, trying to get us up in a higher gear. But by the time the end of the week came, he was chasing after us. And we had to take an assault course on that, similar to the cross-country things that they have, you know, up and down streams and mud and all the rest of it, pass out for that. Now, same with the truck. We did a week on a truck. All three of us had driven before. But we didn't let the... We told the instructor, we didn't let the examiner know. Anyway, we passed. And then I was... Next week I was posted to Aldershot, which of course was the infantry wing of Sandhurst. And then we got to know what drill was.
Can you take me through the drills and exercises?
Yeah. I'll tell you who was the regimental sergeant major. You've probably heard of him. Tippy Britton. He was our regimental sergeant major. They were all guards. The sergeant majors, ours were our sergeant major, company sergeant major, was a Scots guardsman. And the sergeants were all guards. So it was real guards drill you had to do then. I'd never known anything like it before. Anyway, there we did the usual thing. We had lectures, plenty of lectures, how to do this and how to do that and what to do this and what to do that, how to behave as an officer and all that sort of thing. And we passed our tests. We went on, what was a 13-week course, I think. Yes, I think it was, no, 4 months. It was February when I passed out. February 43. November when I went in, November, December, January, February. No, 3 months. 3 months. 13 weeks, I think it was. And we finished up in Snowdonia for 10 days on prolonged manoeuvres. And I can remember it rained every day we were there. We'd go out in our fatigue dress, that's, denim battle dress, and we'd get soaked. We'd come back and we'd put it in the drying room overnight. And then put it on the next day dry. Oh, it's terrible, that was. It was good, though. Enjoyed it. And after that, then, we came back, finished our training and passing out parade. I always remember them tittering at Tibby Ripon when he gave his orders, because he's so high-pitched. And he used to curse. But that's something, of passing out parade at Sandhurst. The old adjutant was always, we were all having a bet on whether he would or he wouldn't. There was always someone with a doings and a shovel and a pan in case he did.
The horse,
yeah.
To come back to the training, you said they told you various things. Did some form of psychological training come in for, you know, understanding the men or the types you would meet?
Oh, yes. I can't remember it now, but there was, yes. Oh, yes.
Were you given men to work with as well?
No. It was mostly done in a lecture room. We were divided into platoons or squads, and each squad had a lecture room. I remember our officer in charge of ours. He was the Royal Ulster Rifles. Quite a nice chap.
Weapons? Did you go through a wider range of weapons and?
Oh, yes, you do battalion weapons, not company weapons. That included 3-inch mortar, anti-tank weapons, proper anti-tank weapons, carriers, ring gun carriers and that sort of thing. You'd cover everything. And you did, believe it or not, you did your physical training at the physical training wing, which was at Aldershot, not far down the road, and did they put you through it too? Oh, it was quite a do. Quite an experience.
Handling men in action, did they go through this process with you?
Oh, yes, in theory.
Well, handing a squad of men.
Yeah, in theory.
That was in theory as well.
Because you had no squad to the you could do. What we did is we took our turns in dealing with our own squad, you see. That's how it's done. It's done like that in the police, too, just the same when I joined the police later on after the war. You'd be sort of made, you'd be in charge for certain things and you'd get the others to do it. And you'd, here again, it would be various situations and you'd go through it individually and as a squad. And this was done mostly in Snowdonia, of course, where you took your turn in being in charge of the squad. I can remember we had to do a cross-country march by compass. And I remember I got lumbered with that, and there was worse night time doing that. But we got there in the end. But that's the sort of thing that, you know.
Attacking and defending situations in various terrain and so forth, was this taught as well?
Yes. It was taught in theory at Duin. So then when we went to Snowdonia, we put it into practice. We had quite a few things like that in practice at Snowdonia. Very important that was. 10 days. I think it was 10 days or fortnight. I can't remember. All I can remember, it rained every day. We were at a place called Capel Curig. Do you know it? And we.
There'd be quite a lot of experience now coming through. From the war, you know, for experiences in the war itself. Were lessons being learnt and were they being applied to you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They kept us up to date, don't you?
And they refer to various situations which hadn't gone well and how they could have changed them, this kind of thing?
No, I can't remember whether they actually did refer. But they put... We had... Even in the lectures, we had... problems put towards us about what to do in such and such a case, and we had to either jot them down on paper or sing them out in class or whatever it is. That was done quite a lot, and I've no doubt for instance, the doctor. I mean, all this pincer movement had all come in. That was all come from the Germans. That was all part of the training, you see, of coming round the side and all that sort of thing. With covering fire from the front.
This would be fire and movement.
Yeah.
Approach.
Yeah. Oh yes.
At the end of your course, and you passed through, as you say, did they ask you which regiment you were interested in, or did it again was just posted and you were just told?
No, they did. They asked you which regiment you. They didn't get posted the regiment I wanted. I applied for the 4th Somersets. The Royal Fusiliers, or the Middlesex. I got posted to the East Surreys. not that it meant anything. Because after we'd been, passed out, we were sent to the 5th, one of the battalions of the Buffs, up near here, Heddon, near Hull.
Which battalion?
I don't know which one. I don't know why the 5th sticks on my mind. That might have been a holding battalion. Anyway, it was Heddon, just outside here. We were in Nissenhuts. We weren't there very long. I blotted my copybook because the officers there at the time were still sticking to World War I, and I spoke out. I'm one of those people that speaks out. I don't sort of keep it to myself. Anyway, we moved up to Shildon. You know Shildon, don't you? We hadn't been there very long, and we were kitted out for a draft to the Middle East. That was myself. John Reed, he was the other one. Do you know him? Heard of him?
The name.
Yeah. He and I, the funniest thing that was, we kitted us out in Shildon with all tropical kit. They must have known where we were going. And when it came to the doings, I was the senior, having been in the army for some time. They made me OC trade. Second lieutenant, OC trade. And of course, John took the draft. I took over the train at Shildon. And by the time we finished at Liverpool, I'd got colonels and brigadiers and everything. I was OC 3. I felt really.
What are the duties of the OC train?
I can't remember. To make sure that everything is running smoothly, mainly that's what it is. You've got a carriage to yourself, and if there's any problems, they come to you, and if you can answer, supply them all well. And the same, making sure that when people join the train, that they're able to get in and no one gets left behind and all that sort of thing. You sign for the train. Oh, yes. And you hand it back the other end. Well, it's, I must have been about at least half a dozen, if not a dozen carriages, I think, all the way from Shildon to Liverpool. And then we embarked on the Britannic out to the Middle
East. What date was this?
Oh, dear. This would be in 1943. I would say spring 43, maybe early summer, possibly about March, somewhere in that region. And we went out. I think we took about 10 days to get to Algiers.
Was it a big convoy that you were in?
Oh, yes, quite a big convoy.
What were the conditions like on the boat?
Well, for us, ideal, because, of course, I mean, we had cabins, four to a cabin. But the men, I think it wasn't too good. I used to go down there sometimes, and they, you know, because, you see, they're confined down below decks. We were all right. The food was marvellous. That's a food. Beautiful food, really good food. I wasn't used to it. And, of course, being in cabins and upstairs, I've never been seasick. I can remember coming back from the Brunevel raid when I was in the Royal Fusiliers in February 42, in one of those assault boats. And everyone else was seasick except myself and another chappie. Mind, we spent most of our time bailing out. The waves were high as houses.
Can we just dwell on that? This was some raid that you were on where you were in the Fusiliers.
Yeah. This was when I was... when I was waiting for posting to Octu, we were at New Milton, and there was a raid by paratroops. Apparently there was a radio location station there, and they wanted parts of this radar that the Germans had. And our Pioneer platoon and... platoon from the South Wales Borderers went up to Inverary. We embarked at Glasgow, just outside Glasgow, one of the Greenock or Gorick, I can't remember, Gorick I think it was, and sailed up to Inverary. We spent 3 weeks with the Navy on the Royal Albert, which was a cross channel steamer. And we lived in hammocks. That was really a change of scene. Trying to climb into a hammock for the first time. But we lived in hammocks and had our tot of rum every day. We lived for 3 weeks. And then the stranger may seem that it was the same battalion that did the Falklands, the second parachute battalion. They're mostly Scottish. They came to us at Inverary and practiced taking them off the beach, you see. That was our job. We were going to take them off the beach. They were going to go over, do the job, come down to the beach, and we were going to take them off. And of course, there were five of us to each boat. We had each had a brand new Bren gun and one anti-tank rifle between us. So it was four Bren gunners and an anti-tank rifle to take them off, covering fire to bring them off. And we practiced up in Inverary for all. Week 10 days, and then we came back down the Irish through the Irish Sea. I always remember the Irish Sea thing, but I wasn't seasick. I was very fortunate. Down to Portland, and then eventually, I'm not sure it's Portsmouth or Southampton we left for. Anyway, we left one night. The paratroops had already gone over. February 42, this was about a month before the raid on the, what was it, that raid with the Canadians was badly...
Dieppe raid?
Yes, I think it was Dieppe. Anyway, we were about a month before that, and Lord Louis Mountbatten was with us, and we embarked, disembarked onto the dunes and went ashore and saw them coming off. We let rip with the Bren guns, but we were able to get them off and everything. And then we transferred them to more motor torpedo boats, and the motor torpedo boats put a line out to three of us behind each one and towed us back to Portsmouth.